Louis was basically on career and political appointees to say there must be a mix. But what Chairperson, I would draw the members to is the discussion that the committee had when the bill was first tabled in Parliament in terms of the criteria for HOM, because the committee said, as it stands now, that clause seems to be referring to the functions of the heads of mission, rather than how the person gets there. Thank you, Chair.
Member, this requirement by or recommendation made by Ambassador Moloi, what are we saying about it?
Thank you very much, Chair. I will start with the support of the content advisor's advice when we had a discussion in the committee about coming up with the criteria, because of it doesn't show or say anything about the criteria, and we need to insert criteria that then shows that we professionalize the foreign service. And I think we should add things that call for probity checks of a head of mission. Before they get to be appointed, there must be probity checks in order to, and they must be fit and proper person. And probity check will obviously include the checking of all those security clearance, pending disciplinary cases, and anything. I think probity means encompassing in terms of all those checks and that needs to be done. And the fit and proper person also does that. In as far as, and it should also say that before they get posted, because of the problem, if you recall when we had an interaction with the Association of Former Ambassadors, with the late Ambassador Nene, he said, the problem is if you don't do these probity checks before people get appointed, it becomes a problem when they are appointed to try and address the problem. And we had a lot of instances where we had egg on our face with ambassadors with drugs, criminal records in Singapore, and we don't know how they got to be posted from the beginning. So we need to add the criteria and explicitly put it here and say there must be probity checks. It must be fit and proper persons and security clearance, everything before, just like we said in 3, when we said anyone who's transferred before they get to be posted to be transferred overseas, they must have already met all the requirements. And I think here we have to do the same. Well, when it comes to the issue of career and political deployees, it's common concern. We know that the ambassadors and heads of missions are appointed by the president, and sometimes politically it's not a problem, but the issue that we want to address, it is the professionalism of it. The prerogative of the president is there, you know, but the professionalism of it, and I'm not sure if we can put a sort of a percentage. I think maybe it might come into the regulations by the minister of saying how many career diplomats and how many political appointees. But the appointment of ambassadors is a prerogative of the president. All we can do is to make sure that there are criteria and requirements for someone to qualify to be a head of mission.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to request that, Chair. I get the point, and also what informs that, without stating it, that it should include all those property and check, fit and proper. I just want to speak on the fit and proper. Fit and proper is very subjective. Probably the latter part of your statement, that the rest then can be accommodated in terms of the regulations, because there are a lot of number of things there that you need to talk to. But the professionalization of the individual as well, there's that 3 months or 6 months training. It should also, they are 3 months one. It should also, the one of the module, so to speak, should also incorporate that part, so that then it's adhered to. Thank you, Chair.
All of the things you have said there, Honourable Khalapa, are correct, but do we want them in the Act? I don't think so. Well, the Act says the head of the mission shall do this and this and this, is responsible for this, the head of the mission. Now, you are talking about the process before a person is a head of a mission. You see, that's what Clause 4 is not addressing, what you are saying, the recruitment of the head of the mission, but it's talking about the functions and responsibilities of the head of the mission. So these are two different things. That's the first thing. The second one is that it is common cause, in my view, that a person who is a career diplomat, for instance, would have obtained a security clearance from the Department of State Security, would be conducting himself or herself very well in the country, in the country sent to be re-sent to another country, etc., etc., until a matter arises about misconduct. And secondly, it is also common cause that a non-career diplomat, say, for instance, a political appointee. This person was a member of parliament from any party, non-partisan, non-sexist, gets appointed outside. Now, this thing of the professionalization that Ambassador Muloi is talking about, Ambassador Muloi is speaking on behalf of the career diplomat, which has been a turf war for very long. Those who are career diplomats have always felt that failed politicians actually get dumped into their space because they are career diplomats. We are here because we are professional diplomats. You are a political deployee, and they put you in what would have been our space. So it's just turf war. Then should we get into that in terms of the bill? Because sometimes they take a very lucrative posting mission and give it to a political appointee. For instance, Comrade Zola Square was from here, was a minister. Then the next thing he was in the UK. So you have people, and I'm not saying it actually happened that way, but you have people who may have wanted to be there because UK is UK, Germany is Germany, as we all know, France is France, as we all know, and the USA is USA. So people want to get into that space. Sometimes you find that there is a political intervention, they send people there. And sometimes the president takes, I'm just going to speak to all of the issues that I, sometimes takes a person from the opposition, either big or small opposition, to address a particular concern. For instance, the president appoints somebody as an ambassador to Israel who is not a career diplomat because this person is a South African and is a Jew. So you're dealing with a particular matter. Or a particular diplomat, because that particular diplomat politically is actually a Muslim. That's why you've got the Now, I don't want to mention names of people. I'm just saying.
You already mentioned me
once, Minister. No, not you. But all I'm saying is that when you're dealing with this international environment, you see how you so sometimes there are things among the political appointees that you don't find among the career diplomats. So I want to say that it's not something we should factor in the recruitment phase. And lastly, Honorable Mukhalapa, you see, all of us, I'm just talking about human nature now, all of us are, let me start it this way, the personality of the person, when you say Norma Sango is a good person, you are referring to the sum total of my conduct and behavior, up to the point that you are saying that. For the last 20 or 50 years that you have known me, what I may do beyond the point you have said I'm a good person, you don't know. So the probity check you are talking about, that this person is honest, because that's what probity is absolute, is good conduct, honesty, probity. Anyone you send, as a, whether they are career diplomats or they are the political ones, it is because they have satisfied security clearance and all of these other things. But what they may do beyond that point is something else. And you will deal with it when and as it arises. There is only one, and one only, where you may have been woefully careless if you did not establish that one. It is the qualifications. You see, the issue of someone saying, I'm a doctor, and then you post that person, and it's Dr. So-and-so, and you did not check, by the way, where did you get your degree? Is it honorary, or is it academic? Then, as a state, you would have been careless there. I can go on and on and on. Even those who have got particular relationships with us, they think we are good to a point up to we have not done other things to them. Beyond that point, people do other things. Oh, lomkhonyana sewenzani. Oh, lomuntu wami sewenzani. Bungazi ukuthi uzokwenza. Nje, I'm just talking human nature. Right? So, my view is that we can live with what we have. Because if we make an emphasis on, and you see, I also can speak to what they're saying, that is the professionalization of diplomats. This training, what is it provided for? Because my sense is that just as the career diplomats undergo training, then they get posting, they stay in that environment, they get more experience, etc. The political appointee himself or herself actually cannot be posted until they have fired at the training at the what academy, the diplomatic academy. Netinje, I don't know how long the diplomatic academy trains those who come from parliament or former mayors and former MPs, whether 3 months is adequate or is less. Are you able to assist us? Just this one.
As I understand it, the program would vary from the requirement, so it's not prescribed for 3 months set. If people need to go more urgently and there's no requirement that you have to attend it, it is an invitation at this stage, and that's also one of the issues that we would want. We will address the training requirements, of course, in our regular or in the code at least. So it might be for 3 months, but it might be even less than that.
Okay, but that's why we did. Because you think, if therefore is not making it mandatory that at a minimum
Because my role is institutional memory for the committee. Just to remind the committee the discussions which they had, I think it's 2016, to say this issue of head of mission, as it appears now, if the committee refers to the bill itself and you go to the attached memorandum of objects of that bill, and we go to summary of the bill, clause 3.4.
Memorandum,
yes? Yes, it is.
Clause 3.4,
it says, because the memorandum explains what is in the bill, what the committee should be referring to. The bill, when you page seven of the bill. It says clause 4 regulates the appointment of head of mission and the requirements that a person should have in order to be appointed as head of mission at a South African mission. Now, the stakeholders and also the briefing by the content advisor, I remember, the briefing and the other stakeholders have said this is not in sync with what is in the deal. Hence, the committee, during their discussion, that first discussion, they said, no, we need to look into the requirements, so that the bill now talks to the functions. It has left out the requirements. Mm. So it's for the committee now to look at that. And now what, in my notes right now, what the committee has already done as part of the requirement, they said that person should be a South African citizen. I have already noted that. It's one of the requirements that the committee has put. So the committee was also talking to that fit and proper person, and also, you know, knowledge and experience in international relations. It's what, you know, the committee at times spoke about, and also the issue of the removal. How is, when should the ambassador be removed? You know, things which can guide the president, because Article 84, one of the Constitution, clearly is, it says it's the prerogative of the president. But the committee was talking about something that will guide. It was even mentioned what the Anatulima Tandela was. Yeah. Public protector. It was, you know, things like that were mentioned. So this is just to remind the committee the discussions which they have had.
What we are effectively saying is that because in the memorandum, clause 3 and 4, it says clause 4 regulates the appointment of head of mission and requirements. But if you look at the bill, it actually talks about the functions and not the requirements. And then the intervention made by Honorable Mkhalapa then kicks in, where he was talking about a fit and proper person, probity, some training, and of course also security clearance, and then you've just added citizenship. We factor that in. But for the purpose, in terms of requirements, that this person must be a South African citizen, fit and proper. I think he's a South African of good standing, something like that. Fit and proper. And then, you were saying, then it must pass security clearance. Knowledge of international relations. Basic knowledge of international relations or basic knowledge of diplomacy. It's not the same thing. Is a proper person. Fifth, I say. It's so painful that someone could be described as improper. Okay, let's leave it. Advocate Williams.
The last thing was.
No, these are the requirements.
The last thing which the committee was discussing is gender. To say the department, gender should be taken into effect. It was raised by public service, by honorable gender considerations in terms
gender
of
gender considerations, the police of South Africa. Gender. Gender considerations. Are we virtually throwing out in this requirements because of what I said, throwing out some professional, so this thing that that Muloi is talking about, because we're just saying not in the strict sense of it, but not that are we not. So you got them, Anthea?
The last one, Chairperson and members, from the report that came from Canada on the study tour, they spoke of psych management skills. The Canadian model, they stressed on this because they are saying an ambassador is somebody who's going to be managing people. And human relations in missions are the causes of problems. So they were insisting that they look for someone with management. So maybe in the training, I don't know what DECO does now, whether they actually do have a management training for people at that level, because most of the problems in the missions are caused by relations, interpersonal relations. Thank you.
to the diplomatic attorney. Yeah, but you can do it here as part of this.
This person that we have said is fit and proper.
Yeah.
And this person who is a career diplomat or was a public representative, it is assumed that they have good personal and interpersonal relationship. It is assumed that they are like that. It is also assumed that they know how to interact with members of the public, which and various organized stakeholders. Because once they are outside there, these are business people. You're talking to fellow diplomats. You're talking to politicians. These are the things that you want to raise because it's in the international interest. It is assumed that these things were theirs. Then, this one, interpersonal relationship, it must have been cultivated in you whilst you were a career diplomat. Or okay. Yeah, I'm done. You can come in. Come in formally. Honorable Lisoma and Mkhalapa.
Probably, Chair, so that we can, because some of the requirements that are in a suitcase form, which we will not unpack here, because even you are fit and proper. I'm inclined to suggest that also the regulations must take off of that, which also the regulations will also speak in terms of the I'll prefer to call modules, training modules, the inductions and all those, and to ensure that also it cross-check the assumptions of what human skills, natural skills that you might have. That one can be accommodated there. Because otherwise, you will end up like you're appointing a board where it's very prescriptive in terms of the requirements, as it were. Thank you.
That's where the problem, that's why we are having this bill. We mustn't forget why we are having this bill. The department came to us and said, we've got a problem. Okay? And please help us with this. That's why we want to professionalize. And when you professionalize, what do? You regulate. You give requirements. You give certain steps and prescripts. You know, now, the problem with DECO has been that assumption. That no, when you have a politician or somebody coming from academia, they already know this basic stuff. Come, we give you a week training and then off you go. Realizing that no. The world of diplomacy is quite very much different and people are not equipped for that. So it's very important that we put this basic ones. Yes, the most important details will go into the regulations, but at least if we as a committee codify the requirements of who do we see as an ideal head of mission, and then the department and the minister will go into codify based on their practical experience, but we got to give them something to work with. You see, that is what we are doing. South African citizens, fit and proper, basic knowledge of IR and diplomacy, training, interpersonal skills, security clearance, probity. Then they are able to go and operationalize and put it into real terms. That's what we are doing, and that's what we need to do. And that's what we want.
Bethman?
Chair, is there a way in which you give the responsibility to the academy as such? They've always been responsible for the gradings and the actual curriculum. Now, is there possibly a way in which you cover your base by saying that they would need a minimum certificate from the academy, and from time to time the academy has the discretion to, you know, decide what that curriculum is or what the minimum criteria is, so that, you've got, it's almost a check and balance. So it's in agreement with what my colleague is saying on the left here, but just to also have a check and balance in place that, you know, what is objective to you might not be subjective to me. So I might look at the appointment and go, I can see why this person's been appointed, and he just has to say, yeah, I like London and South Africa is a lovely place, and then he's got the minimum, he's got a very good knowledge of foreign affairs. You know, without sounding political, I don't think we've set the bar very high anyway on what knowledge of our foreign affairs, because we create it as we go along.
Yeah.
But I think if it's left up to an academy, that the academy can, you know, they can have a curriculum, and from time to time they can say, well, you have to have a minimum of this certificate from our academy before you're allowed to be a diplomat. And whether it's a one-day course, whether it's writing just a test, and whatever it is, but that there's a check and balance, that the academy takes responsibility as well.
Should go into diplomacy today, because you can't go into an old curriculum. You know, diplomacy is this. You are referring to something of 1980 or 2005. So, because universities, in the nature of their work, they embark on research, then they will enrich the curriculum. And this one is not. So, therefore, the issue of professionalization and what Arnold Bergman was raising becomes material on whether you would want to factor in a minimum requirement of training. So many months, I don't know. Honorable Soma, I want to throw in before they
respond. I'll also build up on what you are saying so that they can respond to one. But also, I think in terms of the requirements that we tend to have a comfort with, in particular the psych management skills, that one, if we can decide also to say a 10-year experience as a politician, like for an example, as a public protector, one of the requirements in terms of the Act, it says you can be a public protector having spent 10 years as a parliamentarian. It qualifies you automatically because it makes an assumption that you understand other things. So I'm picking up the natural skills that you might have by cause of that. Probably I want us to reflect on that if we want to put years here, so that it deals with the soft issues, because the induction would not necessarily deal with that, because it takes years. Two, Chair, in terms of the training, if they respond also to deal with the issues, that because we want somebody also who will go there and represent South Africa, not to contract in South Africa, or who doesn't necessarily like the country, but because there are personal benefits, then you will be a South African, so to speak, in terms of the mindset. Also, that is there any link of the school, of DERCO, the internal one, I'll call it a school, and also the National School of Governance, which also links to the universities. if you can take that one as a homework outside this discussion. Thank you.
I just wanted to check whether this qualifications or the courses or modules that are being executed there, are they accredited? Are they according to the South African Qualification Authority? And after completion, do you get and say that this is NQF what? So those are the things. And I concur with the chairperson when he says that let's link it with the university in order to give it more muscle, as to show that really we are not playing. It means really we are competing with other countries on the issues of diplomacy and also on the issue of international relations. I thank you.
I can respond on the academy status. The intention is indeed to have the diplomatic academy as the academy, the school for training all diplomatic officials. In other words, for the head of mission and for the public servants that will go abroad, if the head of mission is not a public servant, in the same way that the school of government would be training government officials. So this bill is now for the first time saying that you must have diplomatic training. So this gives that particular status to the academy. We did not envisage that we would be so bold to have the academy established as a separate entity falling under the department. We understand the School of Government is that entity. Because of the budget constraints, because of the whole structural issues in government, we were of the view that because there's such a particular nature of this academy, that it dealing with international relations, diplomacy, protocol, and so on, that it is best placed within the department at present. Looking to the future, we might be able to have it as an entity, but then at least we have the basis for that, because this is a big step for an act to already recognize the existence of an academy, and this would be the one of the things that the bill will do. The academy, the courses of the academy for the normal diplomats, for the administration people, for the line function people, are all accredited, SAQWA accredited currently. So the bill also referred to that. So what happens is that some of these courses you would get your certificate that you are on level 7 and 8. But for the heads of mission, and here I think it's not a secret that we have over the past years struggled with the training requirements for heads of mission. We have a very good course. On paper, it's a very good course. Heads of mission are not inclined to sit through courses they don't like. So there's no requirement that you must complete the course. There's no requirement for that course that it is accredited, so that you, say for instance, you sit through a course, and we must also I want to say to you, we must also understand our history. So if you would get very, very good ambassadors that are not inclined to listen to academic lessons. So the course must be tailored also to a broad variety of expertise. Expertise are not only in paper. Expertise are also found in the other things. But then your course must be tailored for that, and there must be a requirement that you actually attend the course. So we don't have that situation now, and that's why we are here with in front of you. That's why we were open enough to come and tell you we do have a problem. So this is the opportunity for, through the Diplomatic Academy then to give that authority to design a course that have all the elements that you would require from your heads of mission in the course. And if the committee would be saying that you have to complete this course, then the bill gives that power to the minister or that she can make regulations to include that. Because also, Chair, and we talk as a family here, remember heads of missions are appointed by the president. We have that old story of, I've been appointed by the president, now who are you to come here to tell me I must come for lessons from a 9 to 5? But now if we have this, it's a prescribed, everybody knows how it works, it would help the department and the country to make sure that, you know, you understand the environment where you're going in, because it needs to be, you know, it's not normal domestic stuff. It's different. So that's why we placed before you the academy and the problems we have, and this is now your opportunity, we believe, to help us tailor-made a course that can be said you have to attend this course.
And then there is something we must tie in, which must be done by a particular competent authority. Why do you undergo training in the Diplomatic Academy? You need to give you the security clearance. A particular authority must say you have the qualification that you say you have. It's not a must, ne? That you have matric, but if you say you have, because you have written it down, then show cause in someone. Is it SAQA? Then that's a competent authority. Let's factor it in that then while you are training, then so that then we are no longer going to have fake doctor, what. Yeah. No, it's quite embarrassing there. And then the other one is that the Diplomatic Academy will develop the tailor-made curriculum. And then, as Bergman was saying earlier on, then we'll give you the certificate, we'll accredit you that you are here for this and this and this. And it's for your own personal use. Yeah. At least you are not raw now. Yeah. Yeah. We go for lunch. It's 1:25 to 2, up to 2 o'clock, and 2 o'clock we start immediately. Lunch is set.